Cape Talk.
Cape Talk. The Open Line.
Call 021-446-0567.
It is that final half hour of the show. We don't schedule any interviews. We leave it all up to you. You then get to call in on 021-446-0567 and we have a conversation. Maybe the things that I've missed, maybe you have the burning issues that you would like to raise. 021-446-0567. I would just like to say that I appreciate when comedians are on air or on a platform. There's expectation of us as the public that a comedian always has to perform. And I appreciate when Kurt and Dylan come on here and say, look, we have real issues to discuss. And sometimes you can find a silver lining, a laugh in there. But I really appreciate when comedians, just like the rest of us, you know, say, you know, I have a really important issue that I want to talk about. And that's how often we get the message across. But your thoughts, your calls, 021-446-0567. Plenty of stuff that we have spoken about today. Why are we so angry? Touched into issues of bullying. I reflected that message from Wayne in Haderfeld at the beginning of the show, where he said that his 14-year-old son has just been suspended after being involved in a bullying incident. A gang of kids, boys and girls, picking on one girl student. Wayne saying his son was recorded, you know, slapping the girl on the backside. And how angry he was, how disappointed he was. And telling his son that's not how you were raised, reminding his child, but remember, a few years ago, you were in school, in primary school, and you were also bullied. And now Wayne saying that he has instructed his young boy to go to school and offer a private and a public apology to that girl. I think that is very important. That is a parent who is being an example. But your thoughts on these and other stories, 021-446-0567. Zita in Claremont, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Lester. You know what? I was listening earlier to this BMAC conversation.
Yes.
And I was blown away that I was scammed. I mean, I never thought it's something that I would have been, have opened myself up to, but it's, I've sort of done it on the basis of this gentleman coming to us in our family and coming to my mom, especially, and saying to her, look, my dad was in the Navy and, you know, working on the whole inequality in of, you know, guys being in the Navy.
Zita, it's an important conversation. I want to get you in.
Yes.
Can you hear me? Are you breaking up there? I have plenty of questions.
Yes, yes, I can.
So your family was approached by...
Yes, my mom. My mom was approached, and she obviously came to me and she said, look, you know, I'm the level-headed one. I'm the one that does the research, you know, into things. No one scams us, you know. Come to me and, you know, what do you think about this? And I sort of dug through it a bit, but when this guy was having a conversation with us, I got his name, I got him on WhatsApp, he's been calling us, he's been phoning us, he's been, you know, getting all our information. He sort of, you know, hobbed on the inequality, injustices, and, you know, saying to us, you know, my mom lives in Kensington, and said to her, look, you're in Kensington, you know, your husband obviously didn't get the money he was supposed to get back then, and this is the reason why, and this whole application process is now here so that we can change this, you know. You guys can get the money back. Your children couldn't go to the school that they were supposed to go to because, you know, you didn't get paid what he was supposed to pay. So we sort of correcting this now.
How did this person know that your father was in the Navy?
Now, this is the thing. I think he's probably gotten all this information. He apparently, my dad has passed away. So we had no, you know, my dad identifying him. He just said, you know, knew my dad really well. Wow. Apparently, he's been reaching out to, like, they must have had access to personal information about a bunch of Navy guys. Because he mentioned quite a couple of names that we knew. And then, you know, this is the same people and telling us people got payouts and, you know, we only had to pay a 20 Rand. And I was like telling my mommy, surely a 20 Rand is not it. But in hindsight, I would rather have my personal information back.
Wow, Zita, thanks so much for telling your stories. And we have a few people who've now called in and messaged us saying that they've also been involved. I don't know if you are considering going to police. I know it's 20 yes, Rand, but I wonder what personal information, personal documents, personal artifacts.
Yeah, it's a copy of my ID. And not just that, he got to an extent where he said that there was now going to be an application open to for kids. So your kids would then also benefit from it. So we had to give, like, you know, a copy of one of our kids' IDs and information so that they could get an educational, you know, support policy that this UKB MAT thing was supposed to send it out to us. So I'm definitely going to be laying a charge against this guy. I mean, I got his number, his details. He's not answering his phone. He lives in Grassy Park.
it's a similar story that Carnita gave to us, that she's been trying to get hold of the person and he's not been replying. But yeah. Zita, thanks so much for sharing your story. Jackie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Lester. I'm well, thank you.
Similar story?
Well, not actually. It was my mum that got scammed a good number of years ago. In fact, it was nearer to the early, middle 2000s. Mm. And she lived in Hanover Park. And my grandfather was actually a war veteran of World War II. Mm. And they then spread, you know how community news spread? And they actually booked the community war in Hanover Park at that point in time. And hundreds of people went because they obviously heard this news. And they paid quite a bit of money. I think it was between 200 or 400 Rand that they had to pay. And because they were promised of this thousands of Rands, or, you know, hundreds of thousands of Rands that they were going to get. And my mom only told me about the story some time after, because I would have told her not to pay that money. But they target the, you know, poorer communities where people hear that they can get some money. Then it's most believable because my pa was a war veteran. He fought. There are photos of him in the war. And that is what happened. And for years, she believed that. I mean, she moved out of Hanover Park after that. But there was just nothing ever since. There were papers also the same story. It was filled in. And I believe that some similar story I have. My sister-in-law living in Bonteville, and we were visiting there just about 2 weeks ago, and there was a community story about somebody from the U.S. that is putting money into the community, and everybody will be given 1,500 Rand a month if you lived in Bonteville. So what is happening, you know, and they target our communities, and my mom passed away about 3 years ago. And,
Do you know how much your mother gave, how much money she had to pay?
I'm not exactly sure. And I've actually gotten rid of the receipt and all of these little things because my mommy was very precise. Uh-huh. She would keep her documentation. And obviously eventually brought myself to going through all of the very personal things just earlier this year. And now, unfortunately, I don't have it, but I know it was in 20 Rand. I definitely know that it was not that little at that point in time.
Jackie, I hope you go to police. I don't know what documentation you still have left. I know it's just an anecdotal story. Gosh, really shocked that many people have been swindled and possibly swindled. Yes. We have to say allegedly until, but it definitely seems so. And as John and Pucky said, you know, Pucky was even more definitive. He says this is 100% a scam. John left a little 5%.
Yeah, I saw that.
But Jackie, really appreciated. Wow. Continue with the stories. Continue with your thoughts. 021-446-0567. The lines are open. You're on the open line. B in Kenilworth. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Yes, before I get onto the insurance, I just want to warn people, since it's World Week, and that is many family members are getting murdered for what's in the will, one person or another. I want them to remember that many people are being blackmailed, elderly people, into writing wills and just leaving it to one person. And besides the blackmail, they forged wills, because it has to be signed by two people and they have to be in the same vicinity signing the will together, two different people for your will. Now, the insurance thing, yes, I have family members I cannot trust. They said they wanted to get us passports, but we said we've got them, and they took my family's IDs, they copied them, and I think they might have life insurances against us. And apparently, sometimes they ask over the phone for your ID number of the person you're insuring, and sometimes they don't even ask for that. Now, what I want to is a main database where we can email in and say we do not want to be insured by our relatives, you know, just in case they intend getting rid of us. I mean, these family members, I don't trust them. When they make me tea, this was before COVID, I used to chuck the tea out the window just in case they poisoned it. So people must, there must be something in this country to stop the murders, and the insurance companies paying out for nothing. Don't they want to save money?
Wow. On whether we can check, we do plan a follow-up. We've had so many people messaging us, and apparently that you can make an inquiry through a service called Astute, and it should pick up Astute, yes, A-S-T-U-T-E, and it should pick up where your policies are and values and where the policies are in your name. And this is definitely something that we feel that we should pick up. And we're very happy to talk about this today and that people are raising this issue. But I must admit, we're of course family that we are. That we are less family with, that we are less familiar or friendly or cordial with. But you talk very, very flippantly about your concerns.
I uncovered the murder plot, so I just don't know what to say. The thing is that I'm just warning people. People are dying over wills. They have to be so careful. You think that people, you know, it says keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And, you know, you do have to know what your family members are doing. And it's too late once you did. You know, I mean, it's not worth dying over a will.
Definitely. B, thank you so much. And I really appreciate it. I'm glad you're still here with us.
I am too. Thanks, Lisa.
B in Kenilworth, thank you so much. Tyrone and Ziggy, I see you. The lines are open. 021-446-0567. What would you do if you uncovered a plot by a family member that they've taken out insurance policies in your name? And then they would have plan to dispose of you. Surely they're not on the Christmas card list this year. But 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp. 072-567-1567.
Cape Talk.
Cape Talk. The open line.
Call 021-446-0567.
13 minutes to 11 o'clock. Ziggy, I do see you in the CBD, but Tyron in Kales River was first. How are you doing, Tyron? Tyron, are you there? Okay, we'll come back to Tyron. Ziggy, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, and you, Lester?
Very, very good. You want to talk about South Africa's anger issues?
Yeah, and actually earlier you were talking about homelessness as well. Mm. And I think the two things are actually quite closely related. And I think, you know, just to start off with, I think the way how I see things at the moment, I think that South Africans are, to start off with, are suffering from intergenerational trauma. Definitely. And I think it's something that is not discussed or really hasn't been dealt with properly post-1994. And I think that has a lot to do with the anger that we're seeing. Mm. But also feeding into the whole homelessness issue, I think when you see what is happening here in Cape Town and the fact that the city of Cape Town is actually just continuing to criminalize the homeless rather than see it as a social issue and develop a more humane approach, they're actually criminalizing homeless people and not seeing it in the largest context of the structural issues in this country. And someone, I don't know who it was, that said, you can always judge a society by the way they treat their weakest. And I think if you look at South African society as a whole, I think we fail, you know, resoundingly on that point. I think the weakest in our society are discarded. They're largely left to themselves. And I think it's just people are not speaking to one another. It's like people are becoming more and more divided and just shouting at one another across the aisle, so to speak. And I really feel that as a country, we can only change when each of us as individuals kind of takes stock of our past and our past history and really understands how we can change our own minds. And also just develop some empathy. I think it's something that's really sadly lacking in our society, is that there is very little empathy, particularly on the part of the more privileged people who generally live in leafy suburbs. I don't think they have much empathy for people or an understanding of why people are where they are and why there is such a homelessness issue.
I'd like you just to info you with you a little bit. We reflected on a message by John earlier, John in Simon's Son. He said, yes, but if we build homes and we build spaces, we attract people, and who pays for it? Well, we are going to pay for it whether we like it or not. In the long run, I think there's too much of a disconnect of how we see what the overall impact of poverty and equality has on South Africa. It will eventually reach our neighborhoods. I'm not saying that poor people are more likely to involve in crime or asocial behavior. What I'm saying is that if you come from a sub-economic area where you are affected by crime, poverty, eventually, we all pay for that. And if we don't see how a basic income grant, for example, could set the trajectory just for a child right now, that in 10, 15, 18 years' time, that child's trajectory in life, in whichever way he goes or she goes, could be impacted right now. On something as small as a basic income grant, of a social program, of an extra teacher in their school, a extra meal as part of a national government school's feeding scheme. Of how, if we pay attention to that now, 10, 15, 18 years' time, that trajectory of that child's life is started now. And in 18 years' time, we ask, oh, what happened to this person? Are they lost in a life of crime? Oh, they're just looking for handouts. We could have solved this problem 18 years ago.
No, well, exactly. You know, and I think the other point, which I think people don't also recognize, because someone was earlier was a caller was talking about disappointment post 1994, that we were sold this utopian dream of the rainbow nation and the future seemed so bright at the time. But I think one of the things that people don't have a political an understanding of the background politics behind that original negotiation out of the apartheid state, was that there was a trade-off made by the ANC at the time, and particularly Nelson Mandela, which is why in some circles he's called a sellout. Because they negotiated, the compromise that the ANC made, that they negotiated a transfer of political power. They didn't deal with an economic transfer of power. The only way how they dealt with that was through the mechanism at the time, which seemed like a good idea of BEE. But the problem is, I think that when the ANC took over this government, it was never really reformed. The systems that supported apartheid still exists. The SAP is basically the same organization as it was 27-odd years ago. And I think therein lies the problem, because the real power in this country was merely transferred from one elite to another elite. And I think why people are angry is because, A, obviously that would be the net result a generation later, is that people are saying, well, where is this transformation? What difference has it really made in my life? And when you look at the economic markers, I mean, the gap between the 10% wealthiest people in this country and 10% poorest has grown since 1994, which is really shocking. And you can start pointing fingers at politicians, but I think people are too quick not to. I don't think there's a strong enough recognition of the importance of the history of our country, not only of apartheid, the structural issues that we're dealing with globally. So with things like Black Lives Matter in, say, the United States, everything is interlinked. They don't operate in isolation. And even the wars in the Middle East. Yeah. I mean, all these things are interconnected in some way.
Ziggy in the CBD, really appreciate it. Final call for the day is Tyron in Kells River. I hope we have you on the line now.
Yes, Lester, can you hear me?
Thanks so much for your patience. How are you?
I'm great, Lester. First, a big up to the post office. I drove past the post office, massive queues, moving quickly. Spoke to some people in Blue Downs. They're getting their 350s.
Excellent.
So a big hats up there. Lester, the other thing is I love the history of. And many years ago as a young man, I had access to a book that had come out of the Wingfield Air Base. And it almost told the real story of Jan van Riebeeck not coming here with three ships, but being a failed doctor arriving on a Reicher.
Do you know what my favorite analysis is of Jan van Riebeeck? Is
he was a gangster. He was a fail. He was chased away.
Jan van Riebeeck was the first corrupt politician in South Africa, and he started a long line of corrupt politicians from 1652 all the way to, what's the year, 2021.
We rebuilt the Reicher, and they renamed it to Goeie Hoop. He went back, told the Dutchman that we reached for the picking, came back with the other boat, came back with three of them then. So he let him come back. We need to go into the history of.
You're very right. When people say, corruption in South Africa started in 1994. No, corruption in South Africa started in 1652.
Willem Adrian was the biggest gangster. He stole land. Adam Tuss was a hooligan as well.
Do you know what was even the whole mythology of Jan van Riebeeck is bogus. The pictures of what we were told, oh, this is Jan van Riebeeck. No, that was a man called Bartholomew van Maiden. All those pictures on the notes. That's not even Jan van Riebeeck.
One thing, Ziggy had a good monologue. The only thing Ziggy didn't add when got to the end of his conversation was that the wealth was not redistributed. They negotiated to keep the wealth in the hands of the ruling white class.
Tyrone,
therein lies our problem.
Fortunately, running out of time, but a great call to end with for the show. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thanks for all your contributions.